welcome, and thank you for coming, Peter.
All right. Well, hello, everyone. It's my pleasure to be here. Teresa and I used to come for this camp with our family many years ago, quite regularly, and then duties in Glenview and summer school and all that kind of stuff intervened, and we're just delighted to be back to visit with all you folks and experience a couple few days of church stuff here. And it's my pleasure to just lead a discussion, what I hope is going to be a discussion on a sub-facet of the overall theme of the camp, which is on freedom and rationality and why people would choose the church. This church in particular, or this faith in general. And I don't know if I would say anything more about myself. I've been in this faith for 48 years, because I'm 48 years old, so I was born into it. And some of you could say the same, and others of you could say differently, but all of us ended up here at this particular camp. And there's probably some personal reasons for that that relate to our topic for today. So maybe we can just dive in and sort of talk a little bit about what we're talking about, and maybe I could get a little bit of a feel for what's going on with the people here around the topic of choosing the church. And what I mean by that is there are so many different reasons that a person would choose to belong to a church. Nobody forced you to come to this camp. Nobody forced you to be a part of this faith. For some reason in your personal journey, you chose to be here, right? Am I right? Or somebody maybe dragged you here, but we won't get into that today either. So I'm just wondering if anybody wants to start and say, well, why are you here? And you could answer that in terms of why are you here at this camp, or why are you a part of this church? What is it about this that has you sitting in this circle on 4 o'clock in the afternoon on July 27th participating in a discussion group here? So, who wants to start?
I'll say I feel, when I come here, I feel like I get spiritually fed. And emotionally, in terms of the connections of people, seeing new people and some of the same people year after year.
Okay, so being spiritually fed and the connections with people.
Yeah.
And that's the camp experience year in and year.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Yep.
I'd like to talk about our young people, teens and college age and 20-somethings, and why we're experiencing not very many of them joining the church and what we can do to change that.
Okay. We can get to that. I won't say that I have the answers to that about why young people choose or not choose the church, but I think we'll probably get into that in some of the different discussion dynamics that I've got sort of planned for us today. But I'm still curious about some of the reasons that you're here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beliefs that I already had and possessed, and a certain yearning to know more, and realizing that there is great power in numbers.
Mm-hmm.
To surround myself with people who have a similar spiritual outlook greatly strengthens and bolsters my advancement, so for my awareness, and also to discover new works and delve deeper into the meaning. So I had questions of it. So it was, what drew me to the church was a gathering of people who I could grow spiritually with and be bolstered by.
So a gathering of people, I actually heard a bunch of things in there. Part of the seeking of questions or answers to questions that sort of resonated, or some merging of what you believe and what the church is teaching, and a little bit of that not wanting to do it by yourself. I think a lot of people turn to a church because there's something about more than me in this particular pathway that we could say that's of value, right? Okay, good. Yep.
You know, for me, I rely heavily on what the ministers bring with their experience, their connections, of the writings, the variety of writings that are all brought together on one particular topic. So rather than me searching out all these different subjects, one subject is chosen.
All right, so if I could reframe what I just heard you say, there's something about what the ministers bring or their professional responsibility to bring a segment or a subject digested in some ways and provide that as spiritual food for the church in a way that is of value to people, is what they sometimes expect to get from a church. Just like if I could expand on that, you know, we turn to perhaps the arguable experts in many different facets of our life. Like if we need to have something medical, we go to a doctor, and we know that they have something that we want, which is going to answer those questions. And so I think some people turn to a church for some of that expertise in what the word says or the way it's delivered in a worship service, for example. So that's good. That's good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Provides a structure, a necessary structure.
And so you're talking about the structure and the ongoing sort of programming of the church. I mean, it's week in and week out, it's around festival times, etc. And if you really go into that, I mean, who created the sort of concept of a week? Maybe the Lord did in the Sabbath day and that whole concept that says there's something about that ongoing cycle of keeping us going with a structure that allows us to touch base with our spiritual responsibilities in an ongoing way. So, Brad.
Yeah, I just wanted, from a minister side, one of the reasons I keep coming back is because this is an environment, I think, from its inception where it's lay people that want to be doctrinally fed. And so it's really nice to come into an atmosphere like that where people have specifically chosen to take time out of their lives to be here to get that instruction. And it's just a great feeling, whereas some other venues we're in, maybe people want to be there, maybe they don't.
Yeah.
And so I find it rejuvenating to have a group that comes to camp.
To camp for that.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a personal value there on the spiritual stuff. Yes.
You say that feeds nicely into what I was going to say, because I love going to church on Sunday for that same reason. And this is sort of like a Sabbath out of a whole life. That would be your Sabbath day.
Just got a few more. Can you guys share on? So all those things are great. Yeah, please, go ahead.
I'd love to come and hear, as everybody else said, one topic, and I learned so much, and it's so doctrinal. I really like it. One of the things I really like is when the pastors start bantering back and forth. I get such a kick out of them. You know, saying, well, what about? You know, that's...
Well, I thought you meant making fun of each other, which we do, too.
No, I do, too.
Yeah, but I mean, talking about The other is a lot of fun too.
All right. Well, very good. I appreciate, yeah, go ahead.
I didn't think that we were going to talk about this, but it sort of came up, and so I just thought of something. Half of my family is in isolated areas,
mm-hmm.
where we don't have churches. We have very, very little coverage from ministers, one being in eastern New Mexico and the other in Memphis. And I question, my childhood and my upbringing in the church has been based upon societies. And I've lived in Bernathen and now in Kempton all my life. So I've had the benefits of the organized church. But so many of our children and all the societies seem to be suffering some by their populations, you know, getting smaller and smaller. And so I don't think the church is necessarily losing those people. It just means that the church has a much bigger problem.
Okay, so
that seems to be a challenge for the church. And I know we're doing some really neat things with the media.
Okay, so yes, so there's a lot of people scattered or isolated or not choosing to really associate in the ways perhaps than they used to in a congregation experience. And
those are two different problems.
Okay, fair enough. So if we could just step back from those, I'd love to have us be able to talk about those kinds of things as well. But the basic concept is that there's something that draws people to associate in a camp setting or in generally in a church setting. And people do it even though there's statistics that go back and forth all over the place about whether congregational life is on the decline in the general church or not, or worldwide in many different denominations or not. There's still a lot of people that turn to religion or to a particular brand of religion that's housed in a church as something that they want in their life. So yeah, we're talking about that. At the basic level is there's something there that people find value in, and so they choose to be there. Nobody's forcing them to be there, so they're choosing to be there. And we know just as many people almost, arguably, that make that choice in that direction. There's some people that make a choice in a different direction. And we can get sad about that. We can get creative about how we address that. We can understand in some ways why that happens, because any organization or any manifestation of the church is going to be flawed in its own way. That doesn't mean that it's still not useful to look at that whole choice dynamic. So I wanted to just share a couple of different teachings as a starting point in that basic concept, and then just get into some questions that we can discuss as long as we have time for about how this sort of manifests itself in the general church or in general in a church. So what are we talking about here? In some ways, we could look at it from the Lord's perspective. Many of us say that the Lord set up this thing called the church. And is that the general church? No, it's the faith of the new church, right? And this is, in new church parlance, it's the fifth dispensation of the church that the Lord has sort of initiated into the world. And there's reasons that he set up a church. One passage is that the church exists where the word is and the Lord is acknowledged, right? So the word exists. There's a revelation of information that the Lord wants people to know. And he wants them to know that he's a God who's leading them in providence to heaven. And some of the things that he wants to say about their life, that's a lot of what the Lord's trying to do, why he set up a church. And so if we think about the Lord setting up a church, he's probably working in his providence within our choice matrix, influencing us to say, yeah, I want that, or I'm going to be a part of that. And how does he do that? Well, in some ways, he sort of gently pushes us in this with this realization that we kind of want to go to heaven one day, right? And isn't the church here to help us along that journey? And we kind of want the kind of peace or inner happiness that our souls sort of long for. And maybe we try a bunch of different things to find that inner peace, but one of the big ones that people eventually try is faith, is spirituality, is this concept of maybe God, maybe the Lord has some ideas about what would make me feel that inner happiness and sense of peace and that my life is being lived the way he intended it and he can bless. And that's a lot of reasons why the people would choose a church. Again, on a very sort of general doctrinal, why did it get set up and what's there? You're going to learn about what the Word says. You're going to have support by a group of people who are trying to rally around that, not only just in the stuff that feeds their minds, but in the way that they live their life, so that we're all supporting each other as best as we can on living the life that leads to heaven. Okay, so that's all pretty basic stuff, but that's some of why we're here. That's some of the things that are in evidence in your answers, I would argue, right? And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. If we wanted to sort of put it in terms of freedom and rationality, we could say, yes, you're free to choose the church. And in our particular church, this faith that's called the New Christian Faith or the New Faith, New Church, it particularly challenges your, it engages your rational. In other words, it's a rational religion. Have you ever heard? You must have heard that, right? We've got ideas that the Lord's asking us to engage in, some of which are going to have us have much more of an understanding of what he wants for us, how he interacts with us, how the world works, and we can choose because we can understand and that makes sense to us to go along with that, that set of teachings or that rational construct of what religion is so that it makes sense to us. So freedom and rationality are sort of baked into the very fabric of the new church. In fact, in some ways, we have perhaps a challenge in creating a lot of individualistic kind of people who are trained or encouraged to think for themselves, even challenge what the church teaches, and maybe disagree with one another. And how do you get sort of a common thread in amongst all those people who say, well, that's not the way I see it, because we encourage that kind of free thinking or individual thinking, right? So that's another way of thinking about freedom and rationality is there's something in us that wants to respond to what the Lord's offering and engage our brains and then say, yep, it makes sense to me to go along this path that the Lord is teaching by means of his church. Those are concepts. The last one that I'll just do for right now is, I'm going to hold off on that. I'm going to direct you to this sheet of paper that I have passed around. And you'll see there's some discussion questions. And this is sort of my outline in some ways, some of the ideas that I'd like to hit as we go through this. But anybody who has any questions or says, hey, I'd really like to talk about this one, please go ahead and say that. But if you look at the first question, for example, it says, what kinds of things motivate a person to join a church? We've kind of discussed that. And why are you a part of this faith? What about the general church in particular? We didn't discuss that as much, but we could consider that question sort of out there. I'd like to talk about baptism, which is the other thing that I was going to get to. And somebody mentioned confirmation earlier before here. And this gets into another dynamic of what the church offers. So consider parents choosing to baptize their child into the faith of the new church. Why would they, or why did you, choose to do that? And it's probably a fairly easy answer, but maybe there's a bunch of value in just listening to a couple of them. Why do people choose to have their children baptized into a church? Yeah.
You have the words of eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you have a child and you believe that this church is teaching the words of eternal life, what else are you going to do with baptizing your child?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. So, yep, John?
Protect them from the Mohammedan spirits.
Protect them from the... Yes, sir?
It's a statement of whom my family can serve.
Who my family what?
Will serve.
Will serve. Yeah. Okay, there you go. To go with our theme, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then when things get a little tough or something, you remember that promise that you made, and you know it's confirms everything.
Yep.
Positive experience.
Do you mind if I just say something about that? Just one of the things that I love saying to parents at the time of baptism, when they're asking me to do a baptism, is there's a lot of things that motivate a parent, right, to do the best that they can for their children. And one of them is to care for their physical needs. They're helpless, they need so much, right? Another is to want them to grow up to be well-adjusted, capable human beings. So that's all the education and the exposure to different things and what are their talents and trying to support them to be functional human beings. But then if we think from a spiritual standpoint, which is a lot of what people do when they hold this new little miracle in their arms, is to say they're much more open than perhaps at other times to the fact that there must be a God who has an eternal plan for this little child. And that awakens in us those innate kind of things that the Lord gives us to say, I want to do the best for this child spiritually as well as physically or even emotionally. And so we turn to a church to help us with that and to acknowledge that the Lord's asking us to be a part of his team to raise that child with the Lord in mind, and a group of people that I can turn to and feel supported and have a place to come and do the worship services and all that kind of stuff. That's the structure around that commitment. So definitely that's some of what goes on in a baptism kind of context. Gail, did you have something else to say?
I was going to say, well, I'm sort of dating myself, but at the time that our children were born, it was a big thing in the church that the children should be marked and numbered in heaven, and so that you would have guardian angels assigned to your child. That was a pretty strong message to say, well, no, I don't want my child to have guardian angels.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty strong message that was being given by the clergy to all of us.
Well, sure. And so there's a passage about the Christianity in that person or around them. And I think that does get into the spiritual world and sort of there's a passage on the back here that talks about baptism being a gateway, a universal gateway with Holy Supper and entrance into a way of living and believing is sort of way I picture that. So you're introducing a child into a way of living and believing that's supported by the church and not only by the people that we can see, but all those people up there in heaven who are trying to supercharge that. But part of the point of this whole thing is that there's sacraments that the Lord teaches of baptism and the Holy Supper. And Rachel, you also mentioned marriage, which we call a rite. It's something, one of those big stepping stones of life that many people take. And where do they turn? Most people turn to a church. When somebody dies, most people turn to a church. And there's these times like adult baptism or confirmation that can be available to people, or even when you build a house or buy a house, having a home dedication. Those are sort of those things that the church can offer, a service that you wouldn't necessarily have yourself. It's a kind of worship service that is augmenting the Sunday by Sunday service or the Christmas services or the Easter services, etc., which is what the church offers. And they are usually resonant with some pretty important pivotal life stepping stones that are reminding us of what this life is all about and where it's heading. So who am I sort of syncing up with in a marriage kind of context to live hopefully to eternity with? we have some children, we get them baptized, eventually somebody that we love dies. All those kinds of things are those places in life where people tend to turn to the church, right? Because it's not just the ideas, it's not just the beliefs, it's actually something that I need in that journey, that support in those pivotal times of life. All right, so when we think about those kinds of things, it gets into, again, sort of this value into somebody's life that a church can offer, which is why do they choose to be a part of that church? So we haven't talked that much yet about why people would sort of put the church sort of at an arm's length a little bit. And I wonder if we could get into that a little bit. The question number three sort of points to that a little bit, and then there's a couple other ones that do as well. In that, and maybe before we get to question number three, if I could direct you to the back of this, where there's a pretty interesting teaching, at least from my standpoint, which is talking about the development of a person's personal faith. The bottom teaching on that page, which I blipped the reference out, it's 6047 of the Arcana Celestia. It talks about people first getting to know what the church teaches. So they have to know what it teaches. And then to discover from the word whether that teaching is true, whether they believe it or not. Okay, do you see that sort of like, well, I'm not just going to take it as if it is true, but I'm going to sort of engage my own thinking process and see if it is or not. And that passage goes on to say if they do confirm it to be true and believe it, well then now let's show the proof from the word or be able to explain it to other people, etc. But if they don't see that it's true, well maybe they're not to create a disturbance or they separate themselves from the church because it's not working for them. And this is in the context, I believe, of not everything that churches teach is really that helpful. And the writings spend quite a lot of time trying to point out where some of the churches other than the new church has gotten it wrong in some pretty important ways. And the Lord, again, wants us to use our brain, not shut it down, not leave it at the door, and say, does that really make sense? So do you see that there's a kind of useful skepticism that we could have come into the equation? And don't we see that in today's world in a lot of different ways? And maybe we could say that there's a good kind of skepticism and there's a skepticism for sake of being skeptic, and you're always going to be a skeptic who's never going to be able to be convinced. So there's good and bad about skepticism. But there are some things about what the church teaches that are a little bit hard for our culture or for individuals to swallow. Sometimes the church teaches us things that we're not supposed to do. And some of those things our culture says are fine to do. And some of those things we're just not personally ready to say is where I am. So, and some of them may be that the church teaches things that aren't necessarily in line with what the word says and need to be challenged. So you see there's a little bit of kind of that skepticism that's useful in there. So the question is, religion sometimes has a reputation, not always good. And so there's reasons that people appear to be more skeptical and less inclined to merge their path with the church's path. And what's useful about that skepticism and what's not so useful. So do you see there's a dynamic of choice there of engaging in our freedom and rationality relative to the church? And one thing I know about the new church and general church in particular is we like to fight with each other, argue about doctrine and disagree and sometimes debate things to the point where it's not always easy to get along. So what's good and what's not so good about that? Does anybody have a reflection on that dynamic of why people would choose to join or not join a church, or belong to it, or engage with their rational, even though it sometimes tussles? Yeah?
Well, I think, and you sort of hit on this, but in the culture today, there's a lot, and probably has gone on for the last 50 years, but getting more intense now of anti-establishment, anti-organization, organized church, and so on. And it sort of, to me, sort of makes sense that a lot of people are walking away from all of these different religions that have been out there. I was talking to a Catholic last week, and they, I would think they were like totally, you know, totally following the Catholic, and they're saying, oh no, we're really glad because the Pope is changing and things are happening or whatever. So even someone who's older than me is looking for the Catholic Church to bend and mold and change with the times. So that makes a lot of sense as we view these churches as past their usefulness. But then the problem that we face, I think, in the new church is that that kind of cultural mindset then works against the new church as well. Because those churches we know have their usefulness is over, but ours we see as being useful going forward, but people are still challenging it. And I think the challenge is a good thing as long as it's not destructive, and that's what concerns me, is it destructive, are we creating schisms and things like that? So it's a good discussion, but how, if we can come to a understanding together in a positive way, that it can be useful, otherwise I'm concerned about it.
Where it leads. Okay. Thank you, Lisa, for those thoughts. It's just a lot on, yep, there's cultural trends, there's how much argumentation can a church really absorb without having people splinter off into different groups, and all those dynamics are true. Yeah?
Well, we already are splintering. Women in the priesthood, Supreme Court decision, that's going to be the next splinter. I grew up in the 60s. Baby boom, and most of my generation wasn't interested in joining the church. And then I hear we're back at that again. I came back because it was the only place I found any comfort. But now here we go. And we were built as a schism ourselves, the general church. It's not unknown in all religions.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that helps the dynamic of growth, or maybe it doesn't. But it's certainly coming again.
And I would argue it probably always will. There's going to be some issue where what the word teaches is countercultural in one sense, and that puts people who have perhaps some very good motivations for wishing that the church was a little bit more this or that, wrestling with or coming to sort of a dissonance with what the church seems to be saying is what the word says. And I would say that if we go back in history, it's probably good evidence that that's been part of the dynamic before, perhaps in some different ways than today. But it's not like it's unheard of what we're facing today. But I would absolutely agree that that kind of dynamic is very challenging in today's world. And it is causing a lot of people to walk away and just decide maybe for a time or maybe forever, yeah, this isn't the place for me. And some of them are people that we know and love. Some of them are in their next generation. Some of them are in our generation, etc. That's part of the dynamic that we get to look at. And what can we do about it? Because we can't sort of say, well, we're not going to teach what the truth says. But maybe how we frame the truth or how we deal with people who see things differently is part where we can grow and change and learn a little bit. But certainly that's a dynamic where we're seeing people exercise their choice and voice their opinions over those very topics. Absolutely in the zone of what we're dealing with today. Right. So, yeah.
So, my name's Deborah Light. I don't know if many people know me. I'm new to the church. I was baptized a year ago, I think this weekend, somewhere. It was July a year ago. And I came into the church after looking for years for a church. Trying churches and running into really what I felt were cliques And believe it or not, I did not feel that in this church, even though I think the church really beats itself up with the Bernathan Church about feeling cliquish. But so I looked for church. I ended up coming to church and getting involved with the choir like right away. And so I got in for like a social reason, and it got me there, and it got me there in the middle of a lot of big events. I was there, you know, an hour early, blah, blah, blah. But a little while afterwards, I got involved with small groups, actually through Cara's invitation and in reading the writings, and they made the next difference. So there was a social difference that kept me there, that got me, that kept me there. And maybe even before that, there was a beauty thing about how beautiful the church is, the physical church, with the beautiful, the cathedral, yeah. But the writings really do strike me as extremely rational. I love the layers of meaning. I come from no religious background at all. I was raised without any religion. My father was Jewish, my mother was Catholic. They both were like not religious at all. I'm getting. But the one thing that I want to caution us about, one of the thing that really was a bright shining star amongst many bright shining stars of things that were really life-changing in reading writings was how inclusive heaven is. You know, that the, you know, the Muslims were there. There's, I don't know if any of you guys know Minhwa at the other, she actually goes to New Church Live, but she was another person that just came, a friend of mine that came into the church, and sorry if I'm taking up too much time, but no. she was facing death with cancer. She was wanting to be baptized. She decided she was a Buddha. She wanted to be baptized. She went to a Baptist church for baptism. She just couldn't do it. Mm. So we were like, she had read, I'm really going off the top here, but she had read Swedenborg. Somebody gave her Swedenborg in Chinese when she was at death's door. She's really kind of in somewhat of remission now, but her coming to this church was based on inclusivity, the fact that her whole generations back in Taiwan were Buddhists, you know? So I just so embraced how smart this church is, just how smart it is. And I'm here because of that. I was baptized. I think baptism for me, I think I had already really had such a spiritual change, but you know, kind of a turning towards the Lord, and baptism was a step for me that was again a tradition or a social, like, hey guys, I'm here to stay, you know, and it, yeah, in front of my family, my friends, and the Lord. So I just wanted to say that, but I wanted to say that it's not to be cautious about culture. Like that, these issues are sometimes bigger than culture. Inclusivity is a big thing. So that's my answer.
Thank you. I appreciate that,
Tamara.
Well, and you know, probably there's hundreds of stories like yours with a different personal spin on it, which is what people love about the faith or the organization, and then a couple things that they're concerned about or wish were a little different or a lot different, right? So I think that that's probably true for many of us in terms of, I work for the church, a lot of us do, and I recognize that this is a flawed organization, but it's pretty cool in a lot of ways too, right? So in some ways, we've got this dynamic where not everyone is going to make that choice for whatever reason. And sometimes we might say, oh, if the church could have just done this a little differently, we wouldn't have lost that person, or something along those lines. And that's a dynamic to just sort of grow and listen to. And if everybody leaves, well, then we're not going to have much left, right? But there is this whole dynamic about that skepticism about where we are relative to our culture and what's impinging upon the church and what the word teaches and all that. Perhaps if I could just get to a couple of other reasons that we've sort of touched on, but maybe just bring them together about the kinds of things that help people to get over whatever issue it is that they wish was a little different or better or fixed in the church itself. Like, all of us could probably list, yeah, this is a problem, or that's a problem, or this is not perfect, right? I mean, I could, And I'm sure you could too. Some of us have done that. But what is it that has somebody get over that? Well, in some ways, I'm a believer in the fact that all of us have some innate desires that the Lord has created in us. And one of them is to get to heaven. So we've sort of mentioned that, but one of the passages in here talks about that. It's the first one from True Christian Religion. It's talking about why we should love the church, because it teaches us the means that lead to eternal life and introduces us into that life. Well, I want to get to heaven, and the church is my avenue to get there, or one of the ways that I can help myself get there, or the Lord lead me there, right? So that's a huge sort of innate want or recognition that a part of our consciousness or even subconsciousness wants. We want to get to heaven one day. We want to be okay in terms of the big trajectory of life. And so we go to a church. And whatever that church has as a problem, sometimes that overarching goal of getting to heaven is helping us to get beyond whatever it is that we wish was different. And I would say, did you want to say something to that, Jennifer?
Maybe you're getting there. But I was just going to say, that sounds like where you might start as a child, or even as a young adult, that I want to get to heaven. But isn't the goal eventually to say, I want to figure out how to serve the Lord and my neighbor better?
Mm-hmm.
And stop being so self-centered about mm-hmm. myself getting to heaven.
Sure.
I mean, is that,
sure.
That's my frustration right now in my life. It's just, how do I, that's, so it's beyond that. And when it stops being so self-centered, it's going to work better. Maybe that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
No, it does. It's just some people are at a starting point and saying, okay, why do I start the journey? Because I kind of want my spiritual life to be intact in the way it is not right now, and I want to be on this path that has an eternity associated with it. That's a beginning point for some, but I'm fully in agreement that there's more to it than that. So I see Jamie, and then.
As I can't speak also for young women, but as a young man in my 20s, getting to heaven was not on my radar screen. I wanted to be successful. I wanted to have money. I wanted to have women. I wanted to do things in this natural world, getting to heaven. Even though I was raised in the new church, wasn't my radar screen. So we need to step back and understand that a lot of our youth, we may have given them the basics and tried to put the remains there, but that's not where they are when they're in their 20s, and unfortunately it's extending to the 30s now, because life is extending. I mean, many of my parents' generation, you got married either right out of high school, right out of college. You started having a family right away. Today, kids don't get married until they're 25 to 35 and start having a family. So just understand that dynamic. They're not looking at the eternal. They're immersed in the natural world.
Very fair comment. Immersed in the natural world. Let me come back to that. Go ahead, Elsa.
Because the church isn't giving them what they want. And the church doesn't have an obligation to give me what I want. The church hasn't, the organized church, has an obligation to give me what is true and right. And rather than leave that church because you decided we had to sit in a circle, I would rather say, I'm not going to sit in this circle, but I'm not going to leave the church because I'm going to find what is of value in this church that I can support outside of this circle. And I think we need to think more of that instead of the church isn't doing anything for me. They're doing this and that instead. And turn around and remember that the church is there for the Lord's sake on earth. And whatever we can do, if I disagree with your circle, that doesn't make me disagree with what you're telling me about the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to remember that. And, you know, some people left the church because you insisted that we wear coats and ties to church, and that's not happening anymore, and that's no reason to leave the church, because the truth is still there. When we start letting go of the truth, that's when we're in trouble. But I think as adults, older adults particularly, we have to remember to stop worrying about ourselves and worry about how we can support the Lord in our organization.
Thank you.
Amen. That's my dad.
So, go ahead. I see you.
Adding on to what Deborah was saying about inclusivity, one of the things, I think there's a big thing about people not getting married till later, because I see a lot of young people come back to the church when they, I've got a baby.
Right?
Yeah, baby tending. But there really isn't any fear other than possibly loss of contact with family for not being in our church, because anyone who leads a good life, leaves in a higher power, and leads a life according to their beliefs to the best of their ability can go to heaven. The Muslims can go to heaven, everybody. They're looking at like Fundamental Baptist, who I knew, there was a big, if you didn't go to church, there was fear associated with what might happen. My sister married a former Catholic, and the parents were, you know, in tears over the children not being baptized in the Catholic faith because they're still not sure they aren't going to hell. So there really isn't a fear that many organizations have to help keep people there. We also don't have an identity. The Amish keep like 80% of their kids, and how many churches keep that? But they have an identity, cultural as well as religious. That I think people can come to the choir and go, oh, this is neat, but there's not a, like, oh, I can see that you're a new church. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So I think there are a couple things that don't hold people, which is a good thing, because you're supposed to be, freedom is so important. But, so I think a lot of kids feel quite free to not worry about whether they're part of the church or not.
Fair statement, yeah. Fair statement. Rachel? Mm-hmm.
Churches. I've witnessed people who have left other churches and people who have distanced themselves from our church because the leaders or the people in the church aren't actually living what is being preached. So, you know, a classic example would be in Catholicism, you know, the priests and the child abuse happening in that. Or, you know, on lower levels of just, you know, preaching in church about charity, but then it's not being practiced in, you know, by the leaders or something like that. It just, so I just thought that was
mm-hmm.
the insight of, you know, why some of our friends have left other churches and come to our church. I've also seen people in our church distance themselves and take their names off because they felt like it just, you know, it's not practicing, there's not the practice of what the teachings are, so I'll
mm-hmm.
stick with the teachings kind of thing, but not being
a part of the organization. Right.
So just wanted to share that witness.
Yeah.
Yeah, just feeling like, okay, I'm in church, but then it's something different. The action is saying something different than what is
right.
being said by the, you know.
And that's going to be a personal perception thing, because sometimes that's what they see, and some particular issue that's very important to them that's dissonant in what they're hearing or seeing or practiced in the church or supported by it. And sometimes, you know, there are people who are bad examples of the faith who mess it up for people, for sure. Our church is not immune to that, unfortunately, but yeah, Mike.
Some sort of an epiphany that says this is the only way, all the other ways are wrong ways,
And so they can't say and let go, I had this vision, this is the way, but if you have a different vision, it's okay. They can't do that. And so they become so enamored, is the word that comes to mind, but I think it's a better one, of their position, they become intolerant of other positions. And that speaks to religion. I mean, even back in the time of when the Lord was born, you had the Sadducees and the Pharisees. I mean, they're always bickering back and forth. We have bickering back and forth. Christianity has bickering back and forth. The Jewish community has, you know, very liberal to very conservative. They still consider themselves Jewish, which is kind of nice. But when they become so focused on a particular vision, then you create problems.
Mm. Well, so part of what we're wrestling with here is, I guess what I was trying to suggest a little bit ago, while we had a nice round of discussion, which I think is very additive to our whole concept here, but I was trying to say, well, what helps people get over some of those challenges that causes them maybe to step away or to feel disillusioned or there's not enough range or whatever it is? And in some ways, I think that there is something about the church helping people get to heaven. I mean, there's a way of framing the church in terms of our new strategic planning process that's going to come out relatively soon of saying, hey, what is the church here to do? It's to help people live a heavenly life. And the living of a heavenly life now is what's going to help people to be led to heaven eventually. And I believe that there is a longing that the Lord plants in us, that each of us wants to go to heaven. And that could be framed as a selfish thing, or it could be something that's responsive to a calling that the Lord's planted there. There are other things that we all have to, about life. I mean, why do religions exist? They're there to answer some of the big questions of life in many frameworks. So is there a God? What happens when I die? Why am I here? Why does suffering exist? Some of those questions are what religion answers. And the value of the particular faith is how well they answer that and how well they transition that into a kind of living that helps people to feel better about their life or feel more value in the life that they're living. So the new church has that as well. And this gets me to something I noted on here of three levels of T. And you could say truth and good, but T is truth. So if we think about this, just bear with me a second and see if this concept works for you. In some ways, most of us in this room would believe that there is truth in the biggest sense of the world, like the Lord is the truth, and there's reality there. There's the way things actually work. So there's like, you know, the golden rule could be good advice. Whatever you want others to do to you, do also to them. It also could be a universal principle of the way things work. If you do treat people that way, life works. If you do not treat people that way, it doesn't work. It's just an immutable law. So when we think about ultimate reality, the Lord's truth, if we think about that as the biggest T, and the Lord's never just truth alone, it's goodness, it leads to the best manifestation of love between human beings as possible. So there's that godness out there that Matthew would have been talking about as infinite, all right? And each of us, in our own very finite way, have our little T, our little thing of what we consider truth and what we consider to be a good life or the good things that we're called to do as human beings. And part of what I heard Dave saying earlier is that there's something of emerging between what I believe and what's the truth that causes me to go in this direction. Now, if you want to look at the Lord's truth, and our little truth, hopefully we're growing and learning over the course of our lifetime so that being fed by the Word, we have more and more of that ultimate truth that becomes our part of our faith, our personal way of living our lives, right? So hopefully our T is changing and evolving and growing and expanding so it's more in line with what the Word actually says. In the middle there's what might be called a middle T, which is the truth that's presented by any particular faith, any church. So take the new church faith. It's going to have some mistakes, some incorrect interpretations, some things that need to change about the formulation of what the Lord's actual truth is, but it's going to get a lot of things right. And that's going to help each of us as individuals to say, I don't have to figure it all out myself. I can come on a Sunday-by-Sunday basis. I can ask questions of people who are in this faith as well. We can figure it out together so that there's a level up of how the framing of those big ideas of is there a God, what happens when we die, why am I here, are sort of packaged for us, and I can say, does that work for me? Well, then I'm going to be a part of this particular church, right? Now, there's a lot that we could talk about there. I've pondered these kinds of ideas personally because in a lot of ways, when we think about a personal faith, the Lord wants us to have that. But in our culture, there's a lot of relativism out there. So I'll take a little bit here and a little bit here, and I kind of like that from the word, but I don't like that part, so I'll put it over here, and I make up my own thing instead of saying, no, actually, I have to tamper my own thing and see what the actual word says. It's a different kind of dynamic. But does, you know, as a concept, I think what helps us to choose a church is because there's enough there that's teaching us what the word says, what is going to get me in touch with what actually works in life. And that's why I'm going to put myself in there and try to have my personal faith fed by that church, because it's giving information that seems to be helping me get closer to what the truth is, what really works in life. And when we boil it all down into, well, okay, that's a concept, but actually life works better when I go down this path. If I want a healthy relationship with somebody else, and this church teaches me how that works from the word, and I try it out and it actually works, then isn't that going to be credible to me? Or if I have the sense of something that is in my life that I'm told from the word is really not working, it's selfish, it's hurting other people, and I do my absolute best to ask the Lord for help to push it away, and life gets better, that's another credibility piece that actually works. So I think all of us have the sense of choosing the church because it actually makes our lives better. It makes our relationships better. It gives me that inner sense of peace, and it helps me to feel like I'm in, to use a new church process or concept, the stream of providence and being led along to all that's good and happy in a way that I wouldn't be or wouldn't be as fully without it. And I think that those are some of those ideas that, flawed an organization as we are, and we could debate those forever, have people overcome those things and say, yeah, but there's a reason to gather and there's some good things happening there that are important enough for me to stick it out even though I don't like this or that, or I feel tugged or pricked by that, by some other part of it. So from my standpoint, we talk about people leaving the church or people who never quite join it or people who want to go on their sojourn and come back when they're married and starting to have kids and stuff. There's dynamic there and there's humanness there. If we, each of us, got in touch with why are we here, what is it that is our essence of the things that help us in our life that have the better quality of life, which we wouldn't have if we were here, even if we could list those things that we don't like, then maybe we could say, in answer to, why should you be a part of the church? Well, here's why I am, and maybe our answers would work for them. Give them a little bit more of a reason to participate than not. So that's sort of some of the meat and potatoes that I was having as I was thinking about this whole concept. And it's not necessarily about just convincing other people. It's just that there is a choice. It is a choice to belong to a church. Nobody's forcing us to be here. But there are some very compelling reasons that we're here when we boil right down to it. And they're pretty important reasons. And the Lord has a lot to say about them that sort of gets in tune with some of those greatest longings or those leadings that he's trying to get us to awaken to throughout our lives. And that's the business that we're in. That's what a church tends to get to, what matters most. So there's a lot of ideas in that. I don't know when we're supposed to stop. I think we might be able to stop right 5 o'clock right now. All right, so we're out of time. I'm willing to stay and just have any closing thoughts of anybody, but please feel free to get up and go on your way if you want to. And sorry I didn't manage the time for some closing thoughts, but I'll stick around if anybody wants to do that.
So maybe we could
thank Pete now and then those that would like to stay can.
Okay.
The next item is dinner at 5:30. Just keep that in mind, please.
So feel free to get up and
like.
Yeah, but get up and talk amongst each other and stuff. But if anybody has, yeah, Dave.
I think one of the neat things about the church is the fact that it tolerates and welcomes discussion.
Mm-hmm.
In my business, I'm in metals, and one of the ways you make a metal better is folding and beating it. I mean, it's how they tempered swords. By folding and beating it, heating it, you're beating the carbon out of it and the impurities out of it, and you're making it better. It's only through that process, which is obviously arduous, and you're taking something that you figured was finished, and you're folding it, and you're beating it, and you're wrecking it again. But by folding it and beating on it, you're getting out all the impurities. And each time that's done, it's better.
Neat.
And I think, you know, that's a parallel. And Swedenborg talks about parallels with the spiritual and the physical world. That, you know, again, you can sift it. You know, you grind something up, you throw it through a sieve, you get the particulates out. You grind it again, you throw it through a finer sieve. It's that process that makes things better.
Yeah.
That's just what I see.
Good point.
There's also the concept of grand man, where we don't all belong to the society of the heart. We also belong to the society of the hand, or the society of the... So there's many different uses in the body, which, you know, they don't all necessarily get along together, but as a unit, and that's where the inclusiveness comes in. It's all the parts working together, and yet some of the parts are very different than the other parts. You know?
That is a great point. Thank you.
And following that, it seems that those parts aren't necessarily good at communicating with each other, are they? There's somebody else who does that communication.
Good point.
Well, I think one of the signs of health is a very external sign, but I read the Post, and contrary to maybe 30 years ago, there's a list of sister organizations and independent organizations and references to a whole bunch of other things that are happening, which I think would have been concealed not that long ago. And so there's an openness, there's an acceptance of the differences that probably wouldn't have been there a while ago.
That brings up a related issue, though. If you read New Church Life, magazine, the list of confirmations in the back is non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the last few months, there are baptisms and there are marriages and there are deaths, but there aren't any confirmations.
Yeah, confirmations is something that's definitely an area for improvement in our church. Or in terms of, is it anything that's not happening is not necessarily valued. And so it's not valued right now in the ways that it used to. And we can try to work on that, or maybe it's not something that'll come back, or maybe it will. I'm really to try and work on that, have a couple ideas in that direction, but you're absolutely right. It's not something that is as frequent as it used to be. Mm. Brad, point taken, Julie.
Just thinking of young people, I'm a firm believer that they, in the long run, they're not going to be attracted to a church that they don't see actually stands for anything. And they may not like the truth that they see it standing for in the moment. But in the long run, I do think they will respect a church that says, these are the truths we see and we hold to them, because you can't be attracted to an amoeba, really. You've got to have something to go for. And I remember you made the comment that I think, you know, in some ways the word is countercultural, and I think it is all countercultural. The word is there addressed to our opprobrium, which is inherently evil. And so if the message, if the truths in the word aren't causing you some discomfort at some point, you're either a celestial angel or you're just not paying attention. And so I think it's okay to have people, you know, anxious, and I don't like that truth, and that's okay. Take a walkabout. That truth is still going to be there. Try those other things. The compass is set. You can always find your way back. But I think in the long run, young people can be attracted when they see that it stands for something and as a beacon on the hill that they can come back to. And I think sometimes we do too much trying to cater to their wants and not enough giving them what they really need.
Thank you. So I've got lots of hands, and I just want to say maybe we'll take my four more and then let you go off to dinner. So I see Eden, and I see, Allison and Cara. Go ahead.
I wasn't planning on saying this, but I will just second that as a mostly young person and, you know, having a lot of young friends, that the most off-putting thing is not actually understanding what an organization stands for. That's much more off-putting than understanding these bullet points of what it is and, okay, then I can make a decision. This is why they think that. That's, and we're young. We don't mind counterculture. You can sell it as cool. So, I mean, there's something there. But that's not my point. I just wanted to second that because I like that. Listening to all this, I sort of struck up. Out of all of my peer group, which is a large group of people that went to the college or anything, I only can think of like three that aren't actually in love with the church.
That are not?
That are not, yeah. The vast majority of everyone I know in my age bracket has stayed very much affirmative of the new church. And I've been starting a blog and was, contacting all sorts of obscure people I haven't talked to or didn't even know, or in my husband's class or whatever, and they're all women and they're all young and they're all, yeah, they're way gung-ho about the new church, but they don't actually have an outlet or a way or, you know, to engage with it because who wants to get involved in the church their parents are fighting about all the time? I mean, so that the side thing I'm wondering is maybe I'm from a little fluke bracket of like everyone I knew actually really likes the church, the new church. And I haven't heard of a lot of people going and finding out from them, well, you know, you were asking us, well, what would we like about the church? And then, well, how would you, you know? And so I was wondering, well, what about asking my giant age bracket? I mean, we turned out like six ministers out of our 5 years, asking us why we stuck as a huge group. What did we like? What is pulling us to it? Why do we still think it's cool? Because we might be able to give you a lot of insight, because we're in this generation, and we're still finding it okay. We might really be able to tell you, well, this appealed to us, maybe you should be selling this, you know?
I would love to talk with you about that. So, yeah. Go ahead, Alice.
Yeah. I love the new church. I care a lot about the new church, and I always have. And I don't know if I'm quite part of Eden's age group. I feel very, very strongly connected to the new church, but I don't really feel like I know what the general church stands for. And that is what has kept me from actually physically joining the general church. I feel very much that I am a member of the new church. But I get the sense that we are a little bit afraid of standing for something, and that is not appealing. So, it's very appealing to have good, strong things to stand for, and I see that very much in the doctrines, and that's what I love about the church.
So if we could get the youth fighting the culture rather than the church, we would be honest.
Cara, I saw your hand up. Go ahead.
Okay. I don't know how to say what I'm going to say, so I'll start talking.
your point about that we are drawn to this church because it helps, we believe in some way that it helps life work better. And I just want to give voice to the concept in the church that love is the ultimate goal. I just came across a passage last week in my work about how faith conjoined with truth is a stepping stone to faith conjoined with love.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I remember the day I was having a conversation with a friend. It was less than 19 years ago, and I'm 56, because it was in my at my new house. That was, she just made a statement in passing about, well, of course you're trying to be a loving person.
Mm.
And I was like, am I? I'm like, that was a new thought to me, that I was trying to be a loving person. But really, that's what the word and the writings are talking
yeah.
about, that it's really about love. And I know that there's stuff about not indiscriminate love, et cetera, et cetera. But, so why am I saying this? I don't know. Something about how love is the goal, loving, and so part of, for me, about what makes, what the church is giving me that makes life work better is that I'm learning how to love people more. And it is about the truth, about putting down my control issues, not thinking I'm the only person that has a brain, and things like that. But I just, we, there's been a lot of talk about truth, and I just don't,
yep.
I just want to give voice to the word love. I don't know what that's all going to look like, but I think it's an important thing to remember that that's what we're heading for, because God is love.
And on that note, oh, there you go. No, what was
that? I just came across a number that kind of blew me out of the water a couple of weeks ago about all the doctrinal differences are just tiny shades of meaning. And if we had true charity, the Lord's kingdom would come on this earth in an instant, is what it said.
1799.
There we go. And so... And to me, that fits with what Brad said about we just, some of us are fingernails, and some of us are earlobes, and some of us are digestive juices, you know, and we don't, and some of us are nursing breasts. You know, we just, we don't speak the same language maybe, but we're all an important part. So if we don't care about those shades of how we talk, that love part is... they'll come join us.
So what other church organization would have a group of people like this sitting around citing numbers, you know, from whatever their source document is? You know, how often is that?
Yeah.
The Bible. Yes. They'd be quoting the Bible.
Okay, I'll take it all back.
Well...
something and still love each other.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
The other thing. I don't think we have to ostracize people. Yeah. The Lord's leading each one of our lives.
I mean, truth and love can go together.
Yeah. Something about that.
And we don't have to look at the heart and say, you need to be something else. You know?
Yeah.
I don't, you know, my ductwork doesn't, you know, just because I'm passing through you as a blood vessel or an oxygen, that doesn't mean you have to change. That just means, you know, that's still an important part of this world, but you need to find, you know, you need to do your use and let the heart do its use. You know? So it goes both ways.
Well, this is fascinating to me because you never know how something's going to turn out. And what I love about this is I keep on wanting to say, well, I want to talk to Carl a little bit more. I want to talk to Eden a little bit more. I want to talk to Allison a little bit, you know, and on it goes. So I hope that maybe is something that spurs you to talk amongst each other. And if ever you want to talk to me about some great insight you had on this topic, I'd love to hear it because this is something that I get to work on, as well as some of you do. So thank you so much, and let's go eat. That would probably be a kindness to the worship team.
So I was thinking.